Brothers of War. 999.M30, 6 years before the betrayal at Istvan III. 1. The banners lay broken at the foot of the Iron Mountain. The dead lay with them, still heaped over the trenches, their flesh slowly fuming into the cold air. There had not been time for the flies and insects to come and begin their feast. They would, though. Even within the ice reaches, the processes of death still moved, albeit at a delayed rate. Above the dead, the hive rose up to the pale blue sky, its spire pointing at the ships hanging above like the accusing finger of a corpse. Archimus watched as the procession approached. Every figure looked tattered and bloody, but they had made their best effort to hold on to some sort of dignity. A block of infantry came first, their silver and red brocade coats buttoned to their necks, laslocks held at port. They marched with precision, but Archimus could see the stains on the fabric. Bandages wound over the face of a soldier, fresh blood bright beside the ochre of dried pus. The jaw of a trooper in the front rank was bound shut, and her head had the asymmetric slumped look of a fractured skull. Behind the infantry came their officers and commanders, each of them raised above the ranks on sprung caliper boots. Their faces were grim and their eyes hard, but there was something broken behind the defiance of their expressions. Last of all came the world prince, thin as a bare branch, silvered robes flowing down to spill over the edge of his palanquin. 12 slaves in blank masks and bare torsos bore the dais chair forwards, sweat glistening on their muscles. Behind them, scribes, advisers, and courtiers followed in a loose gaggle. All of them had the blank-eyed look of people who had just had everything they knew and relied on vanish. Of all the procession, only the world prince himself did not wear surrender on his face. He stared out at the battlefields, eyes never even turning towards those waiting for him, anger screaming from him in silent waves. Rogaldorn waited with his commanders on top of a low hill just beyond the trench lines encircling the hive. 10,000 imperial fists stood on the field around him, and beyond them, 500,000 soldiers of the imperial army stood at attention. Tens of thousands of tanks and war machines sat between the ranked figures. A trio of titans stood above them, their vast pennants shifting slowly in the breeze. It was a spectacle of might and power that would have brought some to their knees, but not the ruler of this newly conquered land. "Still defiant," said Yonad from just in front of Archimus. The fleetmaster was bareheaded, and the cold air stirred the dark hair above his hawk face. His eyes were hard black chips embedded in the rust of his skin. "His kingdom is in ruin, his army's broken, but he's still fighting us in his heart." "That is not defiance," said Sigismund without looking around. "That is disdain. This man does not have the grace to know that he has been granted the chance to be part of something greater. So, instead, he chooses to pretend that he has won a victory. Was there ever greater folly?"
"It is human to want to cling to the past," said Rogaldorn, his voice low. "Always remember that, my sons."
"Lord," said the commanders, bowing their heads as they spoke. Archimus alone did not move. Above him the legion banner rippled in the wind, the silver lightning bolts and sable fists stirring on their field of gold. He felt the standard pole tug at his grasp in the gusting air, but he remained unmoving. Beside him and the Primarch, 20 huskarls stood in double rank, black cloaks hanging from their backs, bolters held across their chests. Beside them, 20 of the Templar brethren stood with drawn swords. On Rogaldorn's left, the towering bulk of Alexis Pollux stood beside Yonad. The fleetmaster's apprentice in void warfare was as stone-faced as always, his eyes cold. On Dorn's right was Sigismund in the black-and-white heraldry of his office, his sword in his hand. Armed and armoured, Rogaldorn stood like a burnished statue between them. Began Yonad, and then stopped, his mouth open as though he did not wish to bite down on his next words. Did the other legion not wish to be present for this?
Clearly not, said Sigismund.
Silence fell again as the procession crossed the last meters of ground. The world prince, on his palanquin, came to a halt. His guard came to attention with a snap of taut muscle and poised weapons. Archimus noted a bead of blood slowly running from under the edge of a bandage swathing the face of one of the soldiers. She did not move from attention as it ran down her face. He felt admiration touch his thoughts, and made note to find these warriors once this was done. The Imperium needed those with such strength.
Imperium victor!
Called Archimus, his voice echoing from the grill of his helm. In sequence, each of the Imperial fists and human soldiers heard the words and echoed them. The cry rose and rose until the air seemed to be made of sound. Archimus raised the Imperial fists banner high, and the entire force came to attention, the movement rippling outwards from Rogal Dawn. Archimus saw some of the defeated officers flinch at the sound and movement. The World Prince looked at Dawn at last, and his eyes glittered with rage. When he spoke, his voice shook with control. My son, my nephews, my father, my brothers, my cousins, make no mistake that you have bought this world with their blood. And we shall remember. Rogal Dawn met the man's shaking gaze.
I stand before you and offer what was offered before, that you may become part of the Imperium of Mankind, that you may know the truth of illumination and live without fear of the dark. For this, the Emperor demands that you give him loyalty and follow his wisdom and the rule of those to whom he has given authority.
The World Prince looked back, lips twisting over his teeth, hands flexing on the arms of his chair.
As ruler of this domain,
he said at last, chewing off each word and spitting it out, and master of its people, I
yield to you and offer fealty to the Emperor.
Silence followed as Rogal Dawn continued to look at the man.
When you speak those words, he said at last, his voice low and cold, you kneel.
The World Prince blinked, and for a moment Archimus thought he was about to say something. Then the man lowered his gaze and gestured at his palanquin bearers. Slowly, the muscle brutes lowered the weight from their shoulders. The World Prince did not stand, but slumped forwards from his chair to his knees, as though the strength to stand had fled from him. Behind him, the procession that had followed the prince out to meet their conquerors knelt and pressed their foreheads into the dust of their world. Rogal Dawn bowed his head in acknowledgement.
In the name of the Emperor of Mankind, I accept your fealty, said Dawn.
And though he did not raise his voice, his words seemed to roll to the horizon. 2. It was night when they came to the Spire Palace. The one-time seat of a royal cousin, it now served a different purpose, its servants and slaves replaced by command officers and military serfs. Since the world's surrender, the mechanisms of imperial conquest had ground into motion and were already breaking and remaking the defeated society. Surveyor forces were sweeping the population, cataloguing resources and assessing existing social structures. Military forces were being evaluated, and plans drawn up to redistribute the most able into crusade forces. The first battalions from the conquered world would join a crusade force within 12 weeks to help conquer others. Iterators had been at work within the masses, and the world's compliance shaped into a narrative that would let the population come to see their new situation with pride. Rogal Dawn had moved between each facet of the operation, hearing the plans of generals and meeting with the humans who would shepherd the world into its new future. He had not stopped, and he had weighed each decision, both great and small, as though it were of equal importance to all the others. Archemus had once heard the great iterator Evander Tobias describe it as a total lack of toleration of anything but complete precision or competence. And the description was as adequate a portrait of the Primarch's focus as Archemus could think of. But like so many pithy epithets, it fell short of the truth. Archemus had watched Dawn at work for over a century, and never once had he seen his path waver or deviate from its course. He did not simply wage war. He was changing the world he moved through by force of will. That had caused trouble in the past, the kind of conflict that came when such a drive met an equally great force on a different course. And it was going to cause trouble now. Archemus had known it as soon as he learned what other force was to share this victory with them. They reached the space in front of the palace's throne room. Guards from the 7th Outremar elite stood to either side of the silver and jade doors, power spears held at attention. Dawn turned and met the eyes of his commanders.
"You have done well, my sons," he said,
and Archemus knew that this would be the only word that Dawn would give on the conduct of his warriors. There was no need to say anything more. Each of them bowed their heads. Dawn nodded.
"You have your duties. See to them. We will speak at the fifth hour."
Yonad, Pollux, and Sigismund moved away. Archemus remained. That was his purpose, to be his lord's shadow and protector. He had once heard a human officer wonder aloud why a being like a Primarch needed a personal guard. There were many reasons, of course, and only some of them had to do with the threat of harm. But the core of why Dawn had a bodyguard was simple: to guard against hubris. Dawn gestured to the squad of Huskarls behind Archemus.
"Disperse," he said.
The warriors moved away, folding into the edges of the corridor. Archemus waited. Dawn did not normally issue orders directly to the Huskarls. They were trained to move around him as though they were not there, their actions calibrated to never intrude on his actions or awareness. The order he had just given said that something was different. Archemus's awareness sharpened, his mind filtering through the details of the situation and surroundings. His memory pulled details of the Spire Palace's layout before his mind's eye. He looked slowly at the doors that led into the audience chamber. A crowned figure looked back at him from the sculpted silver, its hands holding a scepter and a crescent moon.
"Do you intend to enter the throne room, Lord?" he asked.
"Yes," said Dawn carefully.
"I presume you are aware that the security protocols have been manipulated. There has been no security sweep of the throne room in the last hour, and there are no guards within."
"I am aware of that. Do you wish to advise caution?"
"I'm going to assume that I have already, and that you have said that you will proceed as you intended."
Dawn smiled, the expression fading as quickly as it rose.
"A good set of assumptions.
I must insist that I come with you, Lord."
"Insist," growled Dawn.
"I am oathed not only to your service, but your protection."
Dawn looked at him for a long moment.
"Very well," the Primarch gave a single nod. "Very well. Do you know what waits for us inside?"
"I think I do, my Lord."
Dawn's mouth twitched into a fleeting smile.
"There are many battles in this crusade, some costly, some bitter, some that it would be better not to fight."
He put his hand on the door.
"Question everything you see," he said, and pushed the doors wide.
3. The throne room was dark. Light spilled from behind Archemus and Dawn as they stepped through the door. The walls were sheets of beaten copper, curved and riveted so that they looked like the rippled fabric of curtains. Tiny beast heads carved in jet capped each rivet head. The floor was an oval expanse of brushed steel. An oval table sat at the center of the floor. The ceiling soared up and up, tapering to a shadowed point far above. At the far end of the room, on a plinth of raw iron, was a throne spun from carbon and gold wire. A figure sat on the throne, hands resting on the chair's arms, the light from the door gleaming off his armor's silver trim. Scales covered the curved plates, and a crest of bronze serpents rose from the crown of his helm. The throne would have been huge for a human, made to amplify the power of those who sat on it. The armored figure fitted it perfectly, his size and presence making it seem not a throne but a mundane chair. The emerald hydra on the figure's chest winked, reflected light, as he inclined his head in greeting. Dawn met the green glow of its eyes.
"Close the doors," he said to Archimus softly.
Archimus turned and pushed the door shut. The light vanished, and the gloom became true darkness.
"A little too dark for such a meeting," said a voice from the throne.
Pale light kindled within the folded surface of the walls. The metals gleamed, shifting between colors of ice and moonlight. Dawn stepped forwards, eyes fixed. The sound of his steps rang softly on the floor. He stopped in the center of the room, next to the table. Archimus stayed next to the door, his hands still beside his weapons. Dawn looked at the figure on the throne for a long second and then turned away.
"Dispense with the theatrics," he said.
A second figure in armor stepped from a fold in the chamber's walls. His armor was also the indigo blue of the Alpha Legion, but plain and adorned only by an alpha symbol on one pauldron and a crocodilian head snarling in silver on the other. To Archimus's eye, the figure was fractionally shorter and less bulky than the figure on the throne.
"An attempt to impress," said Dawn to the second figure, his voice level and cold. "Or a test?"
"My apologies," said the second figure. "A habit, that is all."
"No," said Dawn. "A choice."
Archimus stepped away from the door, eyes moving from the two figures to his surroundings. He blinked briefly through infrasight, dark vision, and images formed from sonic and electrofield distortion. Then he blinked the augmented views away and looked with his eyes alone.
"My lord," he said, "there is another one, to the right of the throne, armor cycled down to minimal power."
Dawn nodded.
"Thank you, Archimus. I was just waiting to see if my brother was going to reveal his presence now, or whether he was going to continue this charade."
Dawn turned as a third figure stepped forwards, armor purring to life as he moved. This one was also smaller than the figure on the throne, and wore armor that spoke perhaps of a line captain or battalion commander. A crest of stiff, white and black striped horsehair haloed the top of his helm, and a green cloak hung from his shoulders. His right hand rested on the pommel of a sheathed sword. Dawn kept his eyes on this newest figure. At a glance, Archimus could tell that all three of them were shorter than Dawn, but taller than himself, very large for legionaries, but within a blurred zone of size that made it difficult to judge whether they were legionary or Primarch. There were differences, though. Tiny variations in stance and posture that would have been lost to a normal human eye. The one on the throne was the largest, and his armor and demeanor screamed that this was a lord of the Alpha Legion. But there was something too blunt about that picture. Archimus had had a fleeting impression of a slight restriction in the way he moved, as though the figure were as much armor and machine as flesh. As for the other two, the one in the plain armor would not have been out of place standing in a rank of 100 legion warriors. The most recent one to appear had size and moved as though used to command, but both qualities were expected in a ranking space marine.
"Again, my apologies," said the same deep and smooth voice as had spoken before, but this time it came from the helms of all three figures. "An apology only has meaning if it is rooted in regret," said Dawn. "Your words are meaningless."
No reply came. But the third figure reached up and unlocked his helm, as the figure in the throne rose, stepped down to the floor and took his own off. The warrior in the plain armor followed suit. Three near identical faces looked up at Dawn. All were olive-skinned and clean-shaven, their skulls hairless. Archimus could see echoes of both Dawn's features and those of the other Primarchs, but somehow no one feature dominated. as though the face were a blend of all the others. The three faces were very similar, though there were minute differences in bone structure and subcutaneous musculature. But no two sets of differences were the same. Each of them seemed to wear a mask that was deliberately the same, but also different enough that anyone trying to sort one from another would become lost in differences. And of course, he realized, that was exactly the intention. Dawn's eyes had not moved from the figure who had worn the plumed helm.
Alpharius, said Dawn as he stepped forwards, eyes hard.
The other two warriors began to bow, yielding their pretense as Dawn went to greet his brother Primarch. Dawn turned suddenly, his hand flashing out to the figure who had stepped from the throne. The blow never landed. The figure twisted aside from Dawn's fist, the speed of the movement, the mirror of Dawn's attack. Arcamus's bolter was in his hand even as the two Alpha Legion warriors drew their weapons.
Hold!
Roared Dawn, and the room froze. The sound of the word folded and echoed off the walls. He lowered his fist, and the figure he had tried to strike straightened.
Try my patience again, and I will not stay my hand, said Dawn.
Alpharius, for Alpharius it must have been, raised an eyebrow. The other two warriors stepped next to him, and for a moment it was as though Arcamus were looking at three paintings of the same subject to different themes, Lord, Warrior, Son.
When did you know? Said Alpharius,
and Arcamus recognized the voice as the same that had spoken throughout.
Before I stepped through the door, said Dawn.
Alpharius breathed a cold chuckle.
These are my senior commanders in this war zone. Compliance, said Dawn. The war is over.
Alpharius gave the smallest of shrugs.
We will see, he said,
and gestured to the legionnaire with the cloak and crested helm of a centurion, and the giant in the plain armour.
This is Ingo Petch and Kel Silonius. I know of them, said Dawn.
Alpharius looked at Arcamus.
You can lower the weapon, Master Huskarl. With both my brother and myself here, there are few places in the galaxy safer than this room.
Arcamus kept his bolter steady. Dawn glanced at him and gave a small nod. Arcamus lowered the weapon and clamped it to his thigh.
We can speak alone, if you wish, said Dawn.
Alpharius shook his head.
I do not keep things from my commanders. That is a lie, said Dawn calmly.
Alpharius smiled.
Do you really wish us to be at cross purposes, brother? We are at cross purposes, and honesty is a quality I value.
And I do not. Is that the point you are trying to make?
You did not declare that you were operating on this world. Not until you had to.
Our ways are not the same, but you cannot question their effectiveness.
You did not have to kill them!
Dawn's voice shook the air like a roll of thunder. Arcamus looked at his Primarch, but Dawn's face was as fixed and emotionless as ever. Only in the dark glitter of the eyes did the rage leak out. When he spoke again, his voice was low and controlled.
You did not need to kill them.
A heartbeat of silence followed the words. Arcamus watched Alpharius and his two warriors. All of them were as unmoving and expressionless as statues. Everyone in the chamber knew what Dawn was referring to. The world they stood on had resisted initial overtures of compliance. A so-called world prince and a web of blood-tied nobility saw the world as theirs, and theirs alone. Their pride would not let them bow to any other, no matter how mighty. But the billions living within the planet's hives, and the potential contribution those hives could make to the Great Crusade, could not be allowed to remain outside the dominion of the Emperor. Mankind had endured more than enough fracture and folly to allow such defiance to pass. Dawn himself had taken the task of bringing the world to compliance at the head of his imperial fists. They had been winning. Hive by hive, battle by battle. And then the Alpha Legion had arrived. They had announced themselves by taking one of the smaller hives, set to be the focus of the Imperial Fist's next offensive. The hive's leadership surrendered suddenly following a coup. A signal for Rogel Dorn's personal attention, saying that the hive would fall, had been received 6 hours before it surrendered. The signal had used the Imperial Force's highest level of clearance, and had signed off by saying that Lord Alfarius and the 20th Legion were honoured to be joining the 7th Legion in bringing the planet to compliance. There had been attempts to meet with Alfarius and his warriors, but if they heard those calls, they had remained silent. Alpha Legion forces had been sighted in the weeks that followed. A wing of armor had swept out of the ash wastes to lend their aid to the assault on a primary surface hub of the planet's subterranean tunnel network. Scattered reports had placed warriors in variations of Alpha Legion colors in multiple battle zones. Dawn had pressed on, and hive by hive, the world had continued to fall. But a core of resistant hives remained, centered around the seat of the World Prince. On the eve of a renewed assault to take the last hives, the World Prince had sent a signal surrendering. In the course of a single hour, all of his direct blood relatives had been killed. The assassin in each case had been someone trusted and close to the slain. At the end of that hour, the World Prince had given his world to the Imperium, and 401 members of the planet's ruling nobility were dead. Alfarius shrugged, the enameled scales of his armor shimmering with the gesture's movement.
We did not need to kill them. That is true. We could have waited for you to grind your way through their troops, step by tedious step. The future cannot be won by a war waged in shadows.
It will not be won any other way.
Then that future will be dead before it can begin.
Oh, do not moralize at me, brother,
spat Alfarius. And now it was his turn to flick from control to anger.
Would the deaths of all those you would have killed been acceptable because they died in open battle?
Yes, said Dorn.
Alfarius held Dorn's gaze.
I think we see the universe very differently, Rogel.
No, I do not think we see the same universe at all.
They looked at each other, both of their faces set, so similar for all their differences.
The end matters, said Alfarius at last. Victory matters. Everything else is just delusion. With victory, we can build dreams. But without victory, they remain just dreams.
And how would you salvage a dream from your victory? Here and now on this world. We cannot trust the World Prince to rule for us. And you have removed those who could have taken his place. Even a defeated people prefer rule on their own. You have won this battle, but you have done it by seeding the ground with resentment and bitterness.
Some would call what I did gentle, compared to the ways of our other brothers. Kurz, Mortarion,
Angron,
even the Khan and fated Horus. Would you call what they would have done preferable?
They, began Dorn.
You are certain that you are right, said Alfarius. But if you disdain me, then why not my Maker? Why not our Father?
He created us all.
Or do you think my nature accident, or him ignorant of what I do for him, what any of us do for him?
You think he approves of your methods?
He created us all, moulded the mysteries in our blood, put us to use as he needs, sees what we do and yet chooses to do nothing. What does that tell you?
That he expects us to see our own flaws and overcome them, said Dorn.
Yes. And how are you progressing with yours?
Nothing moved in the chamber. Petch and Silonius glanced at each other, but Alfarius waited, unmoving, eyes unblinking.
You will withdraw your forces from this world, said Dorn.
All of them. The agents and operatives, too.
I know that you use them, and I know how. I will be looking for them. and if I find any, they will not be spared.
You will not find any, said Alpharius.
Dorn shook his head and began to turn towards the doors. Alcamus moved with him. He could feel the pressure of his lord's anger aching through the air like cold from a glacier. Dorn stopped at the doors and turned back.
Your initial strikes were misdirected, he said to Alpharius. You infiltrated one hive and made it fall by systematic destabilizing of authority, but you should have waited. You could have used it as a node from which to disperse your human operatives and agents into the other hives. You managed that to a degree, but you could have forced a total collapse in their defenses across the planet, not just surrender by assassination. That move was also mistimed. Another 37 hours and the pressure from our assault would have been eroding their ability to communicate. Secondary psychological fear, doubt, and confusion would have been rising to a peak. You could have ridden that, played and controlled its pace, forcing hives to fall or change sides at the exact moment when it would amplify whatever effect you wanted. What you did was effective, but it was not optimally so. By your own criteria.
Dorn stared at Alpharius, but the Alpha Legion Primarch did not reply.
I know you, brother, continued Dorn. I knew that you were here before I walked through the door. I knew it was you on that throne, but not because you made an error in your masquerade. You made no mistake, yet I still knew it was you. Think on that, brother. It is not that I do not understand what you are or what you do. I understand both. We are what we choose to be.
Dorn turned and walked to the doors. Arcamus followed.
For the Emperor,
said Alpharius as Dorn pushed the chamber doors wide. Dorn paused, then walked on without looking back.